Welcome to Ask a Pediatrician, a podcast aimed at helping parents be more confident and successful in these complex times. I'm your host, Dr. Hillary McClafferty, founder and executive director of the Academy of Pediatric Integrative Medicine. Our guest today is Dr. Maria Mascarenhas. She is board certified in pediatrics and pediatric gastroenterology and is a physician nutrition specialist. She is section chief of nutrition in the Division of GI and Nutrition at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, director of the Nutrition Support Service, medical director, Department of Clinical Nutrition, director of the Integrative Health Program, and professor of pediatrics at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Maria, thank you so much. Welcome.
Thank you, Hillary. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I wondered if you could tell us how you first got interested in medicine.
Oh, you are making me go back many, many, many years. But I think my first thoughts were when I was pretty young, I think. For your audience who doesn't know, I grew up in India. And India, when at that time, you only had so many careers you could go into. But my first thought was I always wanted to help people. That was really the driving force, is I wanted to help people, and I loved science, specifically biology. And so it was easy to marry both things together. And that was a profession that was accepted at that time for a woman to go into. And we had not had, in my father's family, anyone who had gone into medicine. So he was very, very pleased that when I wanted to do that and got into med school.
So you had good support from your family. What did your mother feel about your career choice?
Oh, she was very happy because she actually wanted to do medicine. And now we're talking of the 1940s, and her parents refused to let her do medicine. So when I got into med school, she was very, very happy. So I had tremendous support from my family. Yes.
Wonderful. And as you progressed through your medical training, when did you realize or decide that you were going to focus on pediatrics?
I think that started off, I got interested very early in med school, probably as soon as we did clinical rotations, when I felt that pediatrics was really where my interest was. And what I really liked is the fact that I could follow a child through infancy, childhood, adolescence, and kind of watch them grow and then be part of who they ended up being from the medical standpoint. If I could try and get kids to, well children to have a normal, productive lifestyle, and then also sick kids, if I could try and normalize things as much as possible. So it was very early on in med school, probably when my clinical rotation started, that I decided that pediatrics was where I wanted to go.
And how did you then decide to move into gastroenterology? What were the things that drove that decision?
So when I did my residency during my second year, I realized that I wanted to go into a subspecialty. And so the three subspecialties I considered were neonatology, infectious disease, and gastroenterology, because I felt those subspecialties really, you had to know the whole patient. You couldn't really focus on just one area. And so as a second year resident at Baylor, when I did my rotations, it was very easy to fall into the GI bucket because that's where I enjoyed myself the most. And I love working with my hands. And so the procedural aspects also excited me. So I guess it was love of procedures, the fact that in GI and nutrition, you need to know the whole patient. And it was just a perfect fit.
That's great. So you did where did you do your fellowship training?
I did my fellowship training at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have a very full plate right now in your work. Where are you spending the most of your professional time right now? What's the main thing that you're doing right now?
So I would say my job right now is about 40% clinical and 60% program development, administration, research, education. So that's the split right now. And then the nutrition section, I've really been working on it for a very long time, since 1992. So that program is pretty well established, but I'm really working on growing the integrative health program right now.
So tell us more about the integrative health program.
So the integrative health program is a very, very exciting area for me to be working in. It really brings together everything that's and who I am, because I grew up in India where medicine is really integrative. I remember, you know, getting chicken pox, and then lo and behold, when it was time for the scabs to fall off, they take the neem leaf and they grind it into a paste, and they put it on your whole body from head to toe, including your scalp. So you're like this one green mess of this green paste. And then you bathe, and then all the scabs come off. And because neem is an antiseptic, this is a good way for you to have a natural antiseptic so nothing gets infected. So having lived with that integrative medicine, whether it was food and different things that I initially said was folklore or, you know, but now realizing that there's a medical reason, but they just didn't know what it was, it was easy to get to know integrative medicine. And so I'm so happy that I'm in this field right now, because it really, really represents me coming back full circle to my roots.
How did you introduce that at an institution like the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia? What was the process there?
Well, the lucky part for me was, you know, I believe that Lady Luck has always walked with me, and serendipity is a wonderful friend to have, because I think that has helped me my entire career. But I think there are a lot of people at CHOP and a lot of patients at CHOP who wanted integrative medicine to happen and who are looking for it. I think that I applied for a grant probably 20 years ago to start an integrative medicine program, but I never got it. And this was an internal grant. Oh. But it so happened, I never got it. And I applied again the next year, still didn't get it. And then I gave up. And then I was at a meeting with development and the CEO of the hospital, where we were talking about, you know, food reactions and allergy and things like that. And I think one of the donors then brought up the example of how her child had headaches, and then found someone who was able to help him with the headaches using diet. And I think at that moment, the light bulb went on, because this amazing woman had gone to another institution for this help. And so when they realized what we could do at CHOP, that opened a lot of doors. So I think while there was interest, there was commitment, a lot of people who were trained, who were interested, dietitians, et cetera, it was really getting administration to pay attention to this field out there that parents wanted. And then once we had donors who wanted this at CHOP, it became easier.
Uh-huh. So tell me, what are you especially excited about in your work right now? What is really getting you going at work right now?
We have an amazing team. We've been able to pull really amazing people. We have acupuncturists, two yoga therapists, a massage therapist, an integrative health nurse, and they are at the top of their game. And it's been so much fun creating the program. You know, when I first started, I started in areas that were easy for me to get established. So we started a food reactions clinic, all outpatient programs. And by using the outpatient programs and obviously bringing in revenue to cover my costs, people sighed and said, okay, this isn't going to cost us a lot of money. And then slowly we started bringing the therapies inpatient. And now we're doing, with COVID, we're doing some of these therapies outpatient, not getting paid for them. But we've been able to really establish inpatient integrative medicine, some outpatient integrative medicine. And I think building this whole program has been fun and exciting and challenging, but then fun when we all come together and overcome things. And it's just been amazing to have the support from other colleagues in the institution and from parents and patients and from donors. So it's almost as though everything lined up right. And then I just happened to be there and all these people started falling in my lap. We just hired a program manager in February who is who's a real dynamo, and she's pulling us all together and kind of bringing that cohesion that we were missing a little bit, because there's only so many things I can keep straight. And I was like pulled in a million directions. So she's organizing that piece. And then our most recent team member is a fabulous acupuncturist. So we're very, very lucky. And we have two yoga therapists now who are absolutely great.
Now, that sounds incredible, and it's grown so much, Maria. That's fantastic. Now, tell me about what types of patients you're seeing.
So I think it depends on the inpatient and outpatient setting. In the outpatient setting, we are seeing kids with unexplained food reactions in the food reactions clinic, where we have an allergist, a dietitian, and myself. And then we approach the patient in a holistic way, and we do whatever testing and treatment plans that we need to. And it's been very, very rewarding. The other outpatient clinics we have an acupuncture clinic. We also have an integrative nutrition clinic. And here we see kids who are on unusual diets, a restricted diet. And then we meet the families where they are. We make sure their diets are complete. We make sure the child is growing well. We do whatever testing needs to be done. And we teach families how to cook. We teach families, you know, so it's like the whole package. We also have integrative gastroenterology clinic, where we see patients with all kinds of GI disorders. And these are patients who want an integrative approach to their care, not just medication and testing. And so that has also been very, very rewarding. We just started our integrative oncology program, where we see oncology patients who want an integrative approach. And that is just a pilot, started off small, but now we're going to be growing it more as a telemedicine option, because it was somewhat limiting patients who could only come on that day of the month or those days of the month that we had clinic. But now through telemedicine, and for that, we have to thank the coronavirus pandemic, because that's a silver lining for us. We are now able to reach patients that we would not have before, because all of a sudden telemedicine options are easy. We can do them.
It all came online, didn't it? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So that's really the outpatient piece, those five practices. On the inpatient side, we are seeing children with pain, nausea, stress, anxiety, any patient in that area. We have a big presence in the oncology unit, where we have acupuncture, acupressure, yoga, Reiki, mindfulness. We're partnering with our existing staff there, our child life specialists, with our social workers, and with our psychologists. And then in the other units, we are just expanding acupuncture to them, but we've had yoga, mindfulness, Reiki on those units as well. Also partnering with pet therapy, art therapy, all our child life specialists. So that's really been good. Our yoga therapy inpatient program just launched 3 weeks ago. It's amazing. In the second week of him being here, our therapist had 25 encounters.
Wow.
25. First week was a little bit, because he was being onboarded, and we have a physician acupuncturist who was kind of supervising and making sure everything was being done right, et cetera, and to sign off on him. And once she did that, he had 25 encounters. And then this week it's going to be the same, if not more. So we're very, very excited.
Oh, that's fantastic. Are you doing, are the children able to do yoga in a group setting, or is it more a one-on-one?
So Hillary, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a learning experience for us as well. We thought we would have yoga classes at a certain time on certain units. Didn't work out, because kids have different schedules. They don't want to leave their room. They don't feel well enough. So we do one-on-one yoga. It's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. If the parent is there, the parent can participate. And we have a yoga consult order, and the flock, or the frontline ordering clinician, will designate unrestricted yoga, chair or bed yoga or just mindfulness or breath work.
So that
patient could be lying in bed and they will just do some simple postures, very simple things, just to bring some comfort and relaxation to the patient.
You know, when I hear you describing these therapies that are now in place in your order sets, I mean, it really strikes me how far you have come because, you know, for the listeners, I really want you to understand how much effort and time this took. And now, Maria, it's like snowballing. You have so much momentum going.
Yes, it has been good. As I said, serendipity and lady luck, because I think we would never have gotten this far without the amazing talent and passion and interest. And, you know, I have a very good friend who's actually retiring this month. She's a dietitian and we've worked together for almost 20 years. And she said, the universe listens and cooperates with you. And I think the universe is listening and cooperating. And I really feel that being at CHOP, if we can set things up right and we can show that this can happen, we can be, you know, people can use our example to get similar programs at their own institutions.
Right. It's a tremendous leadership. I want to circle back a little bit because in one of the things that you mentioned, you said, we teach families how to cook. So tell me more about that.
So we have a very nice culinary medicine program at CHOP. We actually have two medical chefs. And so we've also partnered with the Veterinary Community Kitchen, who also it's a nonprofit group in the city, founded by Mark Vetri, who's a famous chef here. And they do a lot of teaching children how to cook. So we've had in various settings, we've taught children how to cook the anti-inflammatory diet. We had a series for kids with inflammatory bowel disease, kids who are on elimination diets. We have the our healthy weight program, and we have classes there to teach kids how to cook. In the healthy weight program, that's really focused on the children, but the other programs, it's been children and their parents. So I think that has been very successful. And at our med school, too, we've partnered with them, and we have two courses right now in the med school. One is with third and fourth year medical students, and one is for first and second year medical students. And the beauty is that we partner with them, our dietitians and our attendings, both at the children's hospital and at the adult hospital have come together beautifully. And we actually took that third and fourth year med student class. It was called the Principles of Nutrition, of Culinary Medicine. And that was made virtual, in May. So we partnered with Vetri and the whole thing was virtual. Instead of being 2 days a week for 4 weeks, so eight classes, it was made into a 2 week class, and we had material and cooking demonstrations every day of the week with discussions and case discussions with faculty, dietitians, all that participation. And so we're waiting for the feedback and we're going to compare it with the in-person class that we had to see what our next steps are.
That's so good. What age do you start the cooking classes? How young are the kids when they can start that?
So in our healthy weight program, we have two age groups. So they're usually children, so not under five for sure, but they're the middle schoolers and then the older kids. So I would say 8 to 12 and then 13 onwards, kind of those two ranges. When they come with their parents, then it's any age. Obviously, the littler kids, we give them simpler things to do, tasks to do, because I remember we had one session we have a primary care practice that's very big in Philadelphia in an underserved area, and they have a beautiful garden there. And in the garden, they grow vegetables. So we have a farmer there who helps grow vegetables. And so one of the activities is to help the kids harvest the vegetables. And so typically, I think that day we used vegetables from the garden and herbs from the garden. And we had little kids there. I think we had 5 and 6 year olds. So they obviously got simpler tasks of breaking the ends of the beans off. And the older kids got child safe scissors and to cut the beans up, you know, a knife, etc. And it was all supervised, because when we partner with Vetri, they usually come with two people. They come with a chef and an assistant chef, assistant chef slash medical educator. And then we usually go with volunteers. So we're watching the kids. And it was absolutely wonderful, because there were these moms sitting there talking and the kids were involved. And some of them didn't know what basil was and what a green bean was. And they actually got to play and taste and eat, you know, eat them and then actually eat the food that they cooked. And it was so, so rewarding. It was just phenomenal. So I think our culinary medicine program has been really very interesting. We've also made some videos. We've partnered with Drexel University around creation of recipes. And that has been also very rewarding.
That it sounds incredible. And When you are working, or, you know, in that sort of scenario, when you're talking about nutrition with families, are there certain questions that seem to come up more frequently from the parents? Like, what are some of the most common questions that you get from families who are trying to figure this cooking out, healthy nutrition and cooking out?
I think parents hear a lot of stuff and they read a lot of stuff on the internet, and they're looking to us for validation often. So we have some parents who know everything. They just want that reassurance that they're on the right track. And there's some parents who really want to learn and they haven't been exposed to much. So those are the two ends of the spectrum. And then we have parents who have knowledge, but that knowledge may not be the right knowledge to be used for their children. And so we kind of navigate all these areas. I would say the biggest thing we have parents coming to us are, how do we, they have kids with ADHD and behavioral issues, headaches, etc., and they want to know what's right to eat. So chemicals, emulsifiers, preservatives, dyes. And one mother, this happened 2-3 weeks ago. It was really gratifying. We, you know, we have 1-hour visits, right? So this was on telemedicine. So we had the telemedicine visit. We gave her some ideas, and because we couldn't complete everything in 1 hour. So Hillary, when you're in person, the visit can run a little bit longer, but when you're on telemedicine, you have to stick to the time because the next patient is waiting for you. So we said, we can't complete everything today, but here's a list. Here's some things for you to do. We sent her some handouts, and let's regroup in 3 weeks. So we regrouped in 3 weeks, and she said, it's amazing. And we said, well, what's amazing? You have to tell us what's amazing. So she went out that day to a local grocery store. And based on what she told us about the Mediterranean diet, the anti-inflammatory diet, she bought a whole bunch of snacks and fruits and vegetables and different things to cook with. And she didn't tell her son what she was doing. She just started incorporating these snacks and these little ideas that we had given her. And he actually, after a week, said, those are pretty tasty snacks you've gotten us. You've got me, you know? And then she was thrilled. So she said, I still didn't tell him that we were doing the anti-inflammatory diet. But, you know, Hillary, it's like baby steps, right? She just made very small changes, very, very small changes. And without him knowing, he was actually, at the end of 3 weeks, eating a much healthier diet than he was eating at the time of our visit. Oh, now, soon to see changes in his behavior, though she did say there was a little less anger and impulsivity. But the whole family was eating right. They were eating, you know, more plant-based foods. They were eating, you know, different kinds of meats. And they'd already cut out some of those processed foods in their diet. And because of COVID, again, the silver lining, there was some partnership around meal prep at home that again brought the family together. And, you know, that you know, and so that in itself was probably also going to be helping the behavioral issues and the stress and tension in the house. So food is a wonderful thing to bring people around.
You know, and for listeners who haven't heard of the anti-inflammatory or even the Mediterranean diet, especially as it relates to children, can you talk a little bit more about that? You know, what does that mean when you say anti-inflammatory and Mediterranean diet?
So the anti-inflammatory diet is a diet, or I would say a way of eating and living, that really brings the best of the Mediterranean diet and lifestyle and traditional Japanese, or the Okinawan, actually, to be more precise. And Andrew Weil at the University of Arizona brought these two ways of living and pulled the best from these two cultures and came up with the adult anti-inflammatory diet pyramid, and then came up with, and then you, Hillary, came up with the pediatric version. And so really the anti-inflammatory way of living is really takes the best, and it's really using whole grain, a plant-based diet, or as we should say, plant-forward diet. So there is meat, there is animal proteins, but not as much. The base is really formed by fruits, vegetables, whole grains, water. And as you move up the pyramid, you eat less and less of these foods. And then desserts, which is very minimal, is at the top, and it really consists of some dark chocolate or dried fruit or nuts, etc. So it's a very healthy diet, in season, locally grown, you know, without any preservatives, chemicals. And I think when I explain that to families, and then I say, think of how your grandparents or great grandparents probably ate, and then it clicks, you know, it's like, yes, we have a lot of modern things that have happened, which are good. We don't want to go back for those kinds of things, but we might want to eat the way they ate, because they learned some things that were very, very important. And I always use the example of my grandparents, of how they lived and how they ate, because it was a very integrative way that they approached, and they both lived till their 80s, 90s without any Alzheimer's or dementia, and very, very healthy and productive till the day they died.
Wow. And I wanted to mention that you and the team have a cookbook coming out about the pediatric and family-based anti-inflammatory diet. And I wanted to ask you how did that idea come into being, and how did that first partnership with Drexel occur?
So we, you know, again, Lady Luck and Serendipity, I'm going to keep mentioning them because how could I ignore them? But we had a donor who was interested in giving money. And when we met the donor, we actually met this colleague from Drexel. And then things never materialized with the donor, but we still maintain the relationship. And he was very interested in a concept that he calls, I'm forgetting the name now, but what it is that typically a company comes up with an idea for a product, whatever it is, cereal, etc. They develop it completely, and then they come to the medical field and say, guess what? We developed this low-calorie product, which is good for you because we read the literature and this is what we think is best. So what we do with Drexel is he comes to us and asks us, what are you interested in seeing? And then he designs products, because it's culinary medicine and the science of food. He designs products that line up with what we want for patients. So as we were using, Hillary, as you know, I did my fellowship as I was starting up this whole program. And as I learned more about the anti-inflammatory diet and the Mediterranean diet, we started talking to parents, and then they wanted to know what to do, and they wanted recipes. So we partnered with Drexel. Again, we got a grant and we were able to do this, where we came up with 15 foods and some videos, which are on our website. And that's how the partnership first came. Then we developed an oral rehydration solution, because we had parents whose kids had sports and they wanted a sports drink that was not full of sugar and chemicals and dye. And so we came up with an oral rehydration solution, which is made from the base's coconut water. And there's a little bit of fruit juice, but it matches up side by side with Pedialyte, the electrolyte composition of Pedialyte. So we've done similar products with Drexel, and we're working right now on foods for autism.
For more information and resources, visit our website at
apim.org, and we're now looking at foods for patients with cancer and who have nausea, and how can we get them foods that will keep their nausea down and that are easy to make and the parents can make themselves at home. So again, it's keeping the cost down, making things available, but using simple ingredients that are easy to find without chemicals, emulsifiers, preservatives, not coming in a can or a Tetra Pak where the liner could potentially leach into the product And so it's those simple things. And I think the most wonderful thing is the collaboration between our dietitians, our physicians, and these scientists at Drexel. And we come together around the table, so to speak, to come up with some good alternatives for our patients. So the idea came really from the patients.
That's what a powerful collaboration, Maria. That, I mean, just incredible. And the links to these resources and the videos and other resources from CHOP will be included in the show notes afterwards. So for those listening, if you have questions or would like to learn more, Maria, as we're wrapping up, are there any thoughts or tips to parents or colleagues that you would like to let them know, last thoughts that come to your mind?
Oh, so many thoughts come to mind. But I would say that taking care of children is really a partnership. It is an honor and it's a pleasure and it's a sacred duty to help take a child, from when they're young to when they're adolescents, and then they transition out of your program. And so I am very grateful to the very many patients who have allowed me to be part of their child's journey. And I think it's a gift. The other gift is to be able to partner with other people, healthcare professionals at the institution and outside, to again improve my knowledge base to help patients. But it's really the partnership. And I was a fellow in 1986, and I remember my first the first part of my fellowship, I met this little baby who had intestinal lymphangiectasia, and it took, you know, a couple of months to diagnose it. And then I followed him till he was 21, and then he was ready to transition to an adult world. And then lo and behold, 10 years later, I get a card, and it's his wedding picture where he is marrying. He looks amazing, and he is marrying this beautiful woman, and his mother sends me the card and writes at the back what he's doing and what he's achieved. And for me, that I keep the picture in my office because it gives me so much joy. And on the days that I get tired, because we all get tired, you know, I look at that picture and I think this is what makes it all so worth it, you know, to be able to help people and to be able to walk part of their journey with them. Because that's what we all, I believe, ships, you know, we sometimes sail together for a little bit and then we part our ways. But it's how many touchings can you have? How many people can you help? That really makes it all so worthwhile. So whatever I do, it's all to help people, help other children, help professionals advance the field, because human nature and love and caring is really what it's all about.
Oh, thank you so much, Maria. And I so appreciate your time today. For more information and resources, visit our website at apim.org and click on the parent portal.